women of South Africa and indeed the women of the world. Earlier on, we were reflecting on the Flux Trends report. This was a report that was commissioned by Liberty that was looking at the trends in really how women are treated and the type of work that they do that doesn't get rewarded, mainly because we refer to it as unpaid care work. And that was presented by Flux Trends. We're now going to shift focus a bit, but still within the same idea of trying to then figure out what has happened over the past couple of months. We now know that the lockdown has been going on for, dear God, sounds like forever, but it's been just over 5 months. And of course, the economic consequences of the lockdown has been that a lot of people have lost their jobs. We still don't know the final numbers. Stats SA will give us that in perhaps a couple of weeks' time, but we are already hearing estimates of up to 3 million people have lost their jobs during the lockdown itself. And keep in mind that in South Africa, we already had way too many people that were looking for jobs but couldn't find them. So adding 3 million more people to that number is a national tragedy. We now have on the line a labor specialist from Cliff Decker Hofmeyr, and this is Fiona Leppen. Fiona, we were speaking earlier on about the fact that there are some women who do work that doesn't get recognized as work, and then there are women that are within the workplace who get underpaid, so we've got the gender pay gap. And now, unfortunately, we've got people that are losing their jobs, and the data that we see so far indicates that the impact is a bit higher on women than it is on men. What are we to do?
This is a real pressing issue, and thank you for raising it and putting that into context for your listeners. And it certainly plays out in the role that women are playing. And as your previous Lady Bronwyn was talking to, the additional pressures that women are facing at the moment in trying to juggle a career together with family commitments. And importantly, COVID-19 has done the woman in the workplace no favours. She's taking on more domestic duties potentially, because it could well be that the domestic assistance that was rendered to the home is no longer affordable. Alternatively, that's incurring travelling and greater exposure potentially to COVID-19 process. She's doing those duties for that reason. She's playing the role of educator of children. Not all children are back at school for obvious reasons. And she's got a job that she's trying to hang on to. And she has an employer that's under strain. And the employer's going to look potentially at those persons that are most productive in the workplace in order to retain their services. And the woman can lose out. And one might ask, why would that be the case? And it's interesting that in a study that I read about in the Harvard Business Review earlier in April, they spoke about the power of the push factor, which is relating to this tension between the woman in the workplace trying to hold on to that position, but still trying to keep that family unit together because of the role that she plays in that family environment. And one of the important things is that women sometimes encounter such tension in this regard, they decide to shift to go part-time or to internally facing roles as an enticement to try and manage the path of overwork. Now, that has an awful impact when there's a potential for selection, possibly for a retrenchment, for example, because sometimes part-timers are the ones, or temporary employees, that might be considered first for a release from the labour market. And that's where the woman has almost the double jeopardy. The second one is obviously giving up on their rational style in favour of hard-charging masculine style in terms of managing their particular relationship-building skills in the workplace and how that's perceived by their male counterparts. And the third push factor was the poor reputation of females in the workplace with mothering roles, suggesting that it's impossible to meet the demands of both work and family, and that those women that do manage to overcome that barrier are described for some reason as bad mothers, or as the article wrote about, horrible women who were not positive role models as working mothers. it's these impacts that you see being played out in the workplace, which is so unfair on women because they have these additional burdens.
Now, Fiona, I think, a couple of months ago, I actually wrote an article about labor fragility. And when you talk about labor fragility, we're really looking at the jobs that are probably the first ones to be shafted when a crisis hits. And I suspect that in the unique circumstance we find ourselves in the middle of a lockdown, a job like a domestic worker, for example, would have become even more fragile because, well, if the parents are at home, then perhaps the perception is that we don't need the housekeeper as much as we thought we would. And we know very well that there are so many of them out there. Even if we lay off this one, whenever we decide to onboard another, it'll be easy to do so. So that type of labor fragility would have obviously hit women much harder than the men, simply because of the way we sort of regard the type of work that they do. In the Southern context, very few domestic workers can say they've got permanent, security of employment, long-term contracts. Is this the type of effect that we're now seeing translating into actual numbers where the women are just the greater casualties of this COVID lockdown?
Yes, there is that concern. I think you raise a very interesting and important point. Women, a lot of women are employed in the entertainment sector, restaurants, tourism, beauty. You're talking to domestic duties as well. And these have been very hard hit by the lockdown. Tourism is still not back to where it needs to be. Neither are in restaurant trade, and a lot of employees have gone out of business in the meantime. And where women are employed in large numbers in those particular sectors, they're hard hit. And I feel in particular for the domestic employee, I think it really is tragic what's happening in that space. And I must say, fortified by what the Department of Employment and Labour has tried to achieve through the COVID temporary employer-employee relief scheme. But that renders a certain amount, but not necessarily the full salary for a domestic employee. But they're expected to return to work. What happens when they come back to work, because we're in lockdown level two, but the job isn't there anymore because the household they were serving can't afford it. And that's a tragedy.
I mean, when we talk about that affordability conundrum, it is unfortunately inevitable that a lot more families are now going to say, well, actually, one of us or two of us as parents is now out of the job market, so we have to cut costs. And of course, one of the costs that we're going to be cutting are the people that are helping us, whether it's in the form of domestic workers, the garden service, and all of those things. And these, of course, have got, significant implications for the entire ecosystem, because we know in South Africa that one wage that domestic worker is earning, that one wage that gardener is earning, that wage feeds a lot more people. And when we're now looking at the prospect of those people not having this opportunity and also not having the skills to transition into something different or another opportunity in the short term, particularly because there are no new opportunities, it now means that there's actually going to be entire families, entire communities that are now affected for much longer than however this lockdown might last by just what has happened. How do you deal with those type of casualties?
I think that I would go back to what our government has tried to encourage throughout this lockdown, is that we must try our level best to assist those that are in that vulnerable capacity. And if it's not a question of being able to afford the full-time assistance, think about trying to take that person for 2 days a week and try to encourage other employers to do the same. So the domestic employee or gardener may have multiple employers, but they can get a full wage for the week. And I think we need to accept that responsibility, because this concept of being at home, starving and unable to feed a family has enormous issues, not just from a stress level, it's a dignity issue. And we should try and go the extra mile. South Africa should help each other. We need to do that. And this country has a history of trying to do those things, and I think it should be encouraged.
Yeah, that's important. That sort of social solidarity must happen at multiple levels, and I think that's probably at the most micro level. We're now also joined on the line by Staff Sithole, who's a spokesperson for the Women of South Africa. Ms. Sithole, I mean, you know the conversation we've been having earlier on about how women are undervalued at home, and then even when they get to the world of work, well, they're still underpaid. And now we now see that, you know, during the coronavirus pandemic, they are becoming the biggest casualties of job losses. What does the Women of South Africa think needs to be done about these issues?
Thanks, Sir, and to your listeners and to the panelists. I think as Women of South Africa organization, what we would like to see government doing is a systemic response to the issues, in the sense that there are legislation which are in place, which needs to be enforced and tracked for implementation. And let's just, for instance, deal with the COVID relief fund. If government was serious about making sure that we have a gender responsive strategy in terms of budgeting and in terms of just management processes, is that from the beginning in the COVID funds or packages, there should have been a measure of saying that these are the set asides which will specifically deal with addressing the issues of economic empowerment of women. And just one example, you look at protective clothing. South Africa is known to be one of those countries which had a very strong manufacturing sector, and women were the majority employees, and traditionally women also are involved in sewing. So that should have been a very easy set aside for COVID package to say. PPE, which goes in relation to overalls, in relation to masks, those should be done by current cooperatives, current manufacturing companies. And it would have been a low-hanging fruit in terms of a COVID relief fund. A lot of money was spent, but if you look, and that is what we want to do as Women of South Africa now, to say, of this package and set aside for COVID, how much went to women? I can tell you now it would have been a significant number.
Yeah, Staff, I mean, that's an important consideration. And I remember a couple of weeks ago, the president, during his Women's Day address, made a commitment that 40% of state procurement is going to be earmarked towards women-owned businesses. And I specifically told everyone who listened to that speech that you must not take that man seriously, because when he says things of that nature, it does create this expectation that things will be done differently. But the government doesn't even know where it spent the money relating to the most current crisis, which is the PPE procurement. So for the government, for the president to then make this commitment that 40% of state procurement is going in the direction of women in particular, for me, that was a very, really ill-advised statement. But I think the other question that I wanted to raise to you is, you know, when you talk about the missed opportunities here, one of the strange things that emerged during the social relief packages that were being handed out is that suddenly women were being penalized on the basis that, well, the statement said we're going to give everybody some social relief package, but if you're already receiving some package, then you're not going to receive another one. And of course, there were a lot of women that were already receiving foster care grants on behalf of children. So they're not receiving in their own capacity. But then when the system said, well, is this person part of a social support structure already? The answer was yes. So therefore, then they were denied the opportunity. How would Women of South Africa react to that type of conundrum that we see happening and acutely impacting women?
Yes, I think that is the biggest challenge we have of the state, is that there is no concerted effort in terms of looking at the role of a woman just in a household. That, you know, in most households, women are the ones who are making sure that everybody has something. So if, for instance, they have looked into the social grant and you say, a foster care grant. A foster care grant means
you've taken an extra burden, isn't it, already? But you as an individual, are you a beneficiary? The question should have been that. You as a person, are you a beneficiary? Because if it's a foster grant, it means there is somebody who has needs to be looked at. It is not you, the person.
Yeah, that is definitely a big problem. Fiona, just to bring you back into the conversation, I mean, issues of that nature that are definitely something that shouldn't be an issue, but somehow the state bureaucracy and the state machinery makes it an issue simply because people either don't talk to each other or they don't have an intimate understanding of what the key issues are relating to, you know, the plight to women in South Africa. Are legal recourses the only way we can actually get the state to understand what to do and how to do it better?
I hear your point,
yeah.
And certainly I think there's merit in the point that you've raised. And yes, how do women make their voice felt? And it means speaking up. And it is really a failure of a system when it means you have to resort to litigation in order to make that point. It shouldn't have to be that way. I think the more one's able to speak up publicly about these issues, that it gives credence to this, it gives recognition to these the plight of women that we've been talking about on this show in many different dimensions, and it takes me back to something in history where Ford Motor Company back in Dagenham plant in London, where the women who were the sewing machinists on the Ford manufacturing vehicle line, they were absolutely critical to that production line. And they were being underpaid in relation to their male colleagues. And they went on strike, a six-week strike, to make the point. Of course, the production line came to an absolute standstill. And it followed an intervention of a woman, Barbara Castle, who was then the Secretary of State for Employment and Productivity in Harold Wilson's government, who got involved and ended that strike through negotiation. But it brought about the Equal Pay Act in the UK. So women can get out there and make their voices felt, but you need that solidarity to make it happen.
Staff, Fiona's just given us an example of what women have been able to achieve across the world. Are women of South Africa going to pursue similar avenues to make things happen?
Exactly. That's why Women of South Africa was formed, because we said, as a collective, we are more powerful. So let's bring together all women organizations, religious, professional, traditional, business together. And as a collective, let's come up with a program which is going to put pressure on government to make sure that there is a systemic response to issues of gender equality, in particular economic empowerment, because women formed 51% of the population. So you are actually, if you are not addressing women's issues, you are not addressing half of your population needs. But if we can come together and come with a systemic, structured, sustainable force, which we are going to make sure that government is accountable to the decision and the pronouncement it makes. Like, for instance, the issue of pay gap. Why are we still having pay gap issues after 26 years of democracy? What is the Department of Labor saying? Why are we not legislating it that it is a crime to do it? Those are the issues we need to take up as women of South Africa, representing all formations. Secondly, let's hold government accountable. The president has announced, he said 40%. We are not happy with 40% because we want 51%. But 40% is the starting point. So we need to say to the president, okay, what informed you to come with 40%? More importantly, how are you going to make sure that state organs implement the 40% aside? How are you going to exercise consequence management? You can't come with a policy directive and there's no consequence management of those who don't implement. Then it becomes a talk shop.
Yeah.
And that's why you come with a statement, I don't take it seriously,
indeed,
isn't it? Because there's no consequence.
Yep. And that, unfortunately, is where we have to end it. We are out of time, but I think this conversation will definitely be revisited. Thank you very much to Fiona Leppin and Staff Sithole, who've been giving us some insights onto really the issues that we're seeing emerging now and acutely affecting women of South Africa more than any other group. After the break...